The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast joins you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and I am joined by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We got some cool stuff to talk about. The winter meetings are about to get underway. They begin Monday, run through Thursday in Las Vegas. Tom, give us a sense of what Hodricourt in Las Vegas looks like. Are you a slot machines guy, blackjack table? Where will we find Tom Hodricourt for these next few days?
In the media room waiting for something to happen, probably. That's you know, the funny thing about the winter meetings is it doesn't really matter what city they're in. We used to think, oh, let's go to a warm weather place because it's the middle of winter. It'd be nice to get the warm weather. But you basically do not leave the hotel, rarely do, especially if you're staying there. Some writers, you know, may be staying in nearby hotels. I'm staying in the actual winter meetings hotel. So I can promise you there have been winter meetings when I walked through the door the day I got there of the hotel and did not walk back outside until it was time to come home.
Oh man.
You just sort of, you're sort of trapped in there, and don't, I'm not asking for any sympathy cards. But you do make personal plans or outside baseball plans at your own peril, because at any time your team might do something. I remember a couple of years ago, we were in the Baseball Writers Association meeting. We always have one during the winter meetings. And they had barely done roll call when word of the Travis Shaw trade started to leak out, and just rudely got up and bolted out of the meeting and went back to the media room to start working on that story. So you never know. The winter meetings haven't been as crazy in recent years as they once were, because free agency kind of bogs down the process. And this year we've got two huge fish on the market in Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. And for whatever reasons, the top guys seem to always jam up some of the free agent signings below them. I'm not sure why, because there's probably only a handful of teams that are able to pay those kind of salaries. We have seen some trades already, though, some big trades. Paul Goldschmidt going to the Cardinals and Robinson Cano going to the Mets. So it looks like it could be a good trading winter. So we'll see how that goes.
Yes, the Paul Goldschmidt to the Cardinals deal. We'll talk about that a little bit later. That's bad news for the Brewers because Goldschmidt is one of the more feared hitters in the National League. Hits very well at Miller Park, too. But the Brewers' emphasis, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but certainly now there's a void at second base that there wasn't there a couple weeks ago. The team electing not to tender a contract to Jonathan Scope. Actually, David Stern's kind of pretty candid, saying that, you know, this is just a deal that didn't work out. They thought that they were going to have Scope for beyond for the remainder of 2018 and then into the 2019 season, and that obviously isn't going to work out. He quickly signs with the Minnesota Twins for 1 year, $7 million. It would have been $10 million if he had stayed in Milwaukee. So, curious, we haven't spoken since that, and I'm kind of curious if that caught you off guard. I personally, for me, it did. I really thought they were going to give him another look, an extended look in 2019 before really making a decision on him. Do you see now second base being the primary objective for this Brewers team going into these winter meetings?
Well, I do think the Brewers you know, thought long and hard about that decision. I know there was a lot of internal discussion, internal debate. There was a time, you know, where I thought it could go either way. But, you know, it became more evident, and especially with David Stern's comments after the decision, that this was mostly a financial move. You know, as you noted, Jonathan Scope was projected to make $10 million in arbitration. He had an $8.5 million salary last year. And he has 1 year remaining for free agency. Simply put, the Brewers at their payroll strata cannot make a $10 million mistake. And without a crystal ball, David Stearns wasn't sure whether it would be a $10 million mistake. I think they really wanted, in terms of just pure baseball decision, to give him another shot at being the Jonathan Scope who hit 35 homers with over 100 RBIs a couple of years ago in Baltimore. But if he continued to struggle as badly as he did after the Brewers acquired him last year, then, you know, you have a $10 million mistake. I you know, the Brewers, I was just looking yesterday, and the highest payroll the Brewers have ever begun a season with is 104 million. I think that was in 2015, and then they broke the team down, got all the way down to 60 million, and then last year began the year between 90 and 100 million. They already have salaries of more than 70 million committed, I think, to like 11 players for next year. And when you now factor in the many arbitration cases they have, I think they still have 7 or 8 remaining. Their payroll is already projected to be probably 110 million. And so that's sort of the level, the comfort level that they like to start a year in this market, because they prefer to keep some money in reserve for in-season moves. And look how well that plan played out last year when they picked up Moustakas and Soria, Scope, who didn't work out, some other players, Gio Gonzalez, Cedeno. You know, they did boost their payroll considerably the last couple of months. And so they prefer to keep some money in reserve to make in-season moves if they're in playoff position. So Scope would have taken up a big part of the team payroll if they kept him, and they just weren't comfortable with that. And the other factor that made it, I think, a little easier to make that decision is their number one prospect, Keston Hira, is a second baseman who is just roaring through their system. The number one draft pick a couple of years ago, was the MVP of the Arizona Fall League. He could possibly be ready for the big league some point this coming season. David Stearns has said he will not begin the season on the big league roster, and some of that has to do with control going down the road, you know, not starting his arbitration clock already. But if he has a great first half at Triple A, I assume he'll be at Triple A, you know, he might be on the team in the second half. And so, you know, you don't need to wrap up a second baseman for years to come when you have Hira. So I think that was a factor too. So all those things contributed to him being a non-tender. But I've already seen some tweets and other social media messages from Brewers fearful that now playing for the Twins, he'll kill the Brewers when they play interleague baseball. But we'll see.
Yes, that's always a concern. So given the financial constraints and what you're talking about with Hira, because I think they only really need to wait maybe the first couple weeks of the season, maybe 3 weeks of the season, before they would get that extra year to avoid sort of an earlier arbitration situation with him. Is it possible that they don't pursue anybody? Because I look at like DJ LeMahieu, Jed Lowrie, some of the second basemen that might be available, they're going to command more money than Jonathan Scope. And if the Brewers felt Scope was too much of a financial risk, I mean, is Hernan Perez the Brewers' second baseman until Hira is ready? Is that a situation we could be seeing right now, that they would not attempt to get somebody new there?
Well, I think they'll shop. And this is a year when there's a ton of second basemen out on the market. But here's the thing. You can bet all those guys, all those established guys, DJ LeMahieu, Brian Dozier, you know, Daniel Murphy, Ian Kinsler, even though some of them are in their 30s, you can bet they're going to try to get more than a one-year deal. They always do, you know. And so the Brewers, I don't think, would be interested in signing somebody to more than a one-year deal for the reasons we just said, mostly Keston Hira being on the horizon. So I think they'll shop. If worse comes to worse, you know, they'll go with what they have. You know, there's still always the possibility that they could do something at third base and then move Trev Shaw back to where he played the last couple of months of last season at second base. I don't know how comfortable they would be with doing that over a long period of time. You know, Shaw does not have the range of a lot of second basemen, but the way they shift and everything, unless the shift is outlawed, as there's current rumblings, you know, RC is the key to the infield because they just move him around as their rover. So we'll see. You know, Mike Moustakas is still out there. They really liked him. There had been some rumblings that he might be headed to St. Louis, but I think that went out the window with the Goldschmidt trade, because now with the Goldschmidt at first base, I think the Cardinals plan to move Matt Carpenter to third permanently. So we'll see. They really liked Moustakas, but he's probably asking for more money in years right now than they are willing to commit. I'm going to have a winter meeting sort of preview in the Journal Sentinel on Sunday, and one of the themes is going to be that the Brewers, because they have such a good talent level now, they can afford to be patient and look for value out on the both the trade market and the free agent market. So, you know, it could possibly be a quiet week for them at the winter meetings. You never know, because you're always one phone call away from something percolating.
Right.
But they do have, it's, you know, like that huge Kane Yelich splash last January 25th. They are not in that mode this year. They don't have the payroll flexibility to add those kind of salaries. Then they don't have the talent need to add those types of players. So it's a nice situation to be in. They've worked hard in the last 3 years to get to this talent level, and they think they're going to be good for a while now.
Along with the decision to non-tender Scope, the club also elected to non-tender a couple left-handed relievers. Xavier Cedeño, one of those mid-season acquisitions you referred to earlier, who struggled in the postseason a little bit, and then Dan Jennings, who did not get a spot on the postseason roster, but certainly, especially in the first half last year, was a big deal. He was acquired as the team broke camp from the Tampa Bay Devil Rays as a Tampa Bay Rays as a. Sort of a waiver claim. I'm guessing this is pretty straightforward. Those guys, those types of left-handed relievers, even in their late 20s, are available on the waiver wire. So I'm guessing the Brewers felt like, why would they continue to pay the same guys when they could get even a cheaper deal, the same type of deal for a couple lefties off of waivers, you know, in the months ahead. I'm guessing that's the case. Anything else behind that other than
No,
that?
I think there are three factors involved in those moves. One was opening up some roster space, you know, to leave yourself in position for other acquisitions. Two was what you just said, that there's usually those guys available towards the end of camp. Don't forget, they got Jennings like after they broke camp last year. He joined them in San Diego after coming from Tampa Bay. And then thirdly, which I think you also alluded to, just no need to pay those kind of salaries right now when you can look for better bargains. So it's, you know, I'm sure Jennings and Cedeño will land safely somewhere else. They're left-handed relievers who have had good track records. But I think now the Brewers sort of value having some open roster space to make moves.
Jumping back real quick before we move on to talk about Keston Hiura a little bit more. You know, he's been great. It was great in the Arizona Fall League, obviously a very good second half. I do think people have forgotten a little bit that he was just okay in the regular season. I mean, he was better than okay, but okay by like top prospect standards. I feel it's a little premature to assume he's going to be here for a good chunk of the 2019 season, but I mean, kind of how you're saying David Stearns views him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he legitimately is at this point. We got to say he's going to be here at least at some point in 2019.
Well, here, you know, two things will decide that, JR. One is a need. Like, you know, remember last year when they just ran out of shortstops, you know, and
Right.
they had to get Brad Miller and tried all kinds of people. So if like guys got hurt at second base or things happened there, that could facilitate it. But the main thing will be what Hiura, Hiura will show them whether he's ready or not, you know. And this guy was just drafted a couple of years ago, so it's just not a huge need to rush him through the system. He's done a very good job of putting himself on the near horizon, but he's never played a day in AAA yet, and he's only played half a year in AA. So, but I do think he's a hitting prodigy. You know, the main concern for him when they drafted him was his throwing elbow, because he had, he was on the verge of Tommy John surgery. He had some things done that helped him avoid that. But they just needed to make sure he could play in the field. They're a National League team. They don't have the DH. And I think he's calmed those fears. Let's face it, this guy's not going to have to be a Gold Glove second baseman. He's an offensive player. I'd compare him more to a Jeff Kent than a Gold Glove second baseman, because you just, the way he's going to hit, he's only going to have to hold down the position in a decent fashion, which I think he's more than capable of doing. So it's definitely exciting to have a hitting prospect like that. It's been a long time since I've seen a guy be that advanced offensively so soon out of the draft, probably since Ryan Braun in 05. You know, you could see right away he was going to move fast to the big leagues, and Hiura kind of reminds me of him and just his sheer hitting ability. You know, he was in spring training last year and showed no fear whatsoever of facing major league pitching, and so it's exciting to have a guy like that. I guarantee you lots of teams are already trying to pry him loose from the Brewers, but I would be flabbergasted if they traded him.
Yeah, pretty much every offseason trade that gets proposed here by fans or elsewhere kind of has to start with Keston here, and if not him, certainly Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, and it seems like all three of those guys are a big piece of the future. Behind the plate, Eric Kratz avoided arbitration a little bit before the non-tender decisions. I'm guessing the club is still looking to upgrade at catcher, but right now as it stands, it would be Pena and Eric Kratz, just as it was in 2018. Are you guessing that's pretty much where we're headed, barring something that is completely unforeseen, that it's going to be another year of Pena and Kratz, or do you think the team is going to be pretty active trying to upgrade a catcher as well?
Well, I'm sure they're one of the 11-9 teams that's checked in on JP Realmuto with Miami. But I mean, Lord knows what you'd have to give Miami for a catcher like that with a couple more years of control. And after the Brewers got Christian Yelich from the Marlins and he becomes the NL MVP, don't you think the Marlins would be almost scared to death to trade another player to the Brewers? I mean, what would you have to give them? I think they gave them some really nice prospects in return for Yelich, but right now that trade's not playing so great in Miami, after Yelich goes on to an MVP season. So I'm not looking for the Brewers to be able to afford Realmuto. They'll probably look around, but I think right now the plan is to split time with Pena and Kratz like they did last year. But they also have Jacob Nottingham, who made some really good progress last year. There was a lot of divided opinion as to whether he was going to be able to be a big league catcher, but I think last year he started to ease some of those fears, and he was up with the Brewers a couple of times, and he's a good-looking young prospect, and he might be their catcher of the future. We'll see. I think 2019 will be a big year for him. So, you never have enough catching, and it's been a real shortage of it in the major leagues in recent years. So they'll probably have to sign some or trade for some just to fill out depth in their organization because, Jett Bandy, who was in AAA, had signed elsewhere, and I think Christian Bethencourt's out on the market too. So they'll probably have to sign some catchers or trade for some catchers just to give organizational depth. But I don't think right now that's a huge priority for them.
So we mentioned it at the outset, Paul Goldschmidt traded by the Diamondbacks. Really stunning what we've seen from the Diamondbacks, and I guess, I mean, the Mariners, the Indians are being rumored to do the same thing here. Teams that are kind of close to contention or just outright in contention. I mean, the Diamondbacks were in the playoff hunt until the final month of the season, essentially, and the Mariners as well. They're bailing. They feel like they're not close enough and can't compete with other teams in the league. So we're seeing guys traded from teams that maybe would be surprising. Goldschmidt in the NL Central has got to be disappointing to Brewers fans. He's a very elite hitter. He hits very well at Miller Park. He's going to the hated Cardinals. Kind of feel like last year when the Cardinals got Marcell Ozuna and it felt like they got a pretty good bargain for him. Goldschmidt's just a one-year player at this point, unless the Cardinals work out a long-term extension. So it's not really clear how valuable he will be to them, but I mean, that's rough news for the Brewers, but I'm guessing, like always, that doesn't mean that they're going to feel an impulse to sort of quote unquote respond to that. Although last year with the Ozuna thing, they did in greater response with Christian Yelich.
And Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't. I mean, you can't operate your team like that, worrying about what other people do. You have to take care of your own business and what makes sense for you. The Goldschmidt thing's scary because he's killed the Brewers every time they face them, and now they're going to face them 19 times. But let's face it, he kills most teams. It's not like he just plays great against them and stinks against everybody else. He usually plays great against everybody else. So that was a nice move for the Cardinals. They needed another bat. They had trouble scoring last year, despite the Ozuna acquisition. Bad news for the NL Central. Just ramps up what's already a very good division. The Reds have been making a lot of coaching moves, including taking the Brewers pitching coach Derek Johnson, that they think is going to help their team. And the Pirates pitching is already scary, and so they just need to improve their offense. And so, it's going to be a fierce division again already next year. I'm sure the Cubs are still going to do some stuff. And so, but that's life. Looking at the NL East is getting kind of wackadoodle too. They're already making tons of moves. Moves to try to close the gap to the Braves. So that baseball's supposed to be competitive, but the way you started your comments on this is there are teams like Seattle and Arizona that are now tearing down a little bit, and you almost wonder if what the Brewers just did in completely rebuilding in 3 years from scratch to almost making the World Series just encouraged encourages teams to go ahead and try to do the same thing.
Yeah, I would completely agree, and I still think the pitching maneuvers that they made might convince teams with smaller budgets to try this type of thing, where it's not necessarily frontline ace pitchers, guys like Ulysses Yacin and Wade Miley maybe, that end up being the types of guys people are trying to sign. I want to ask about the Rule 5 draft in a second, but just in general, do you have any sense? The Brewers typically surprise us, and certainly last year by getting two outfielders at a spot that seemed like that was pretty well set, was a surprise. Anything that you are looking for that maybe the average fan just isn't tuned into that might pop up on the radar in these winter meetings or even in the remainder of the offseason period?
Yeah, I don't, I'm not looking for any big splash type things. I know people have already mentioned them in connection with Madison Bumgarner and Noah Syndergaard. And yeah, would they like to have a pitcher like that? Of course, but I don't see them forking over the high top prospect package that it would take to get a guy like that. And then, as we noted earlier in the podcast, I'm not sure it fits their budget either to pick up those kind of salaries. So, they really like their pitching. They've been hearing for over a year now that they need to go get some pitching, and they've ignored those outside pleas and done quite well. The Chacin signing last year turned out to be one of the biggest bargains on the market. He quickly evolved into their best pitcher after signing a 2-year deal for $15 million. They love their three young pitchers, Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta. And why wouldn't you? All three of those guys could turn out to be solid major league rotation pitchers for a long time. So, and they, they still have guys like Zach Davies and Chase Anderson, who sort of got pushed aside for various reasons last year, that are still in the picture. Chacin's back, Guerra's back. They do probably have interest in adding to that depth. I think they, there's been reports of them interested in the Yankees' Sonny Gray. I think that's true that they are interested in him, but I think a lot of teams are in on him. So you never have enough pitching, but once again, they like their own pitching a lot more than people in the outside world do. And after being one game away from the World Series, how can you argue with that?
Right. The Rule 5 draft will close down the winter meetings on Thursday. Given the way the Brewers shuttled guys so liberally back and forth with AAA, they really made the most of their roster flexibility and guys with options. I'm guessing the Rule 5 draft isn't an area the Brewers are going to be involved. Is that a safe assumption, or do you think maybe they will try to dip their toe in the water on a prospect or two?
Well, they'll do their due diligence like they do in every area of baseball. And if there's somebody there that intrigues them, they might take a look at them. They're going to be picking very low in the Rule 5 draft because they had one of the best records in baseball, so they'd be far down the list. No offense to the Rule 5 draft, but it's probably the most overhyped thing in baseball that never really makes a big difference. Are there occasional guys who break through? Yes, but in general, a large ratio of the players drafted get returned to their original teams because you got to keep them for a whole year, and a lot of them just aren't ready for that. So we always laugh about all the hype of the Rule 5 draft, and then the next spring, like 85% of the players are returned to their original teams,
All right. Well, that's about all I got here for the Brewers. You had mentioned that Travis Shaw trade at the outset is something that popped up right away when you basically walked in the door. Give me any other stories you've got from the winter meeting, something that really, you've been covering the Brewers a long time. Anything crazy that you can recall that certainly counts as maybe the craziest winter meetings you've been a part of?
Well, I remember when Doug Melvin was the general manager early in his tenure, they traded for Carlos Lee. Remember the outfielder Carlos Lee? They traded for him so late in the winter meetings. I mean, literally, the meetings were breaking up. The White Sox had already left to fly home. I think we were in Anaheim that year, and everybody was like packing their suitcases and rushing for the airport. All of a sudden, the Carlos Lee trade was a pretty big trade, and so you do wonder until you leave there, whether something big will or won't happen. They've made big trades at the winter meetings, and then they've had quiet winter meetings too. I think this has a chance to be a quiet winter meeting, but you never know what the next phone call is going to make. going to be. I was kidding with David Stearns the other day. You know, the days of sitting in the smoke-filled the lobbies are gone because you can't smoke anymore indoors, and they don't really meet a whole lot face to face. They sit in their rooms and text each other, and this is. Yeah, and this is how most of the team-to-team contact is. So you really don't even have to be under the same roof. You know, you could easily do that from home. I do think it's good for baseball to have everybody under the same roof. It creates a nice buzz, and there'll be, you know, there will be stuff happening there, and it gets baseball back out front, you know, in the middle of the winter, which is cool. So I do think the winter meetings are good for baseball and just kind of gets them everybody into the forefront again. But is there a possibility it could be a quiet few days for the Brewers? Yes, it is. So that will challenge me as to what we're going to write, but that's okay. I'm up for the challenge.
Maybe Tom Haudricourt, you can actually get a seat at a blackjack table after all, or a slot machine, or something of that sort.
That would not be good for my own personal budget, I
Yeah,
don't think.
I can imagine. Nor mine, nor mine. I can't even put $20 down for a craps table. One roll of the dice and it's gone. So
Let's put it this way. You don't see, tell me the next time you see a casino boarded up because they lost too much money.
Yeah, especially in Vegas, you're not going to find many of those. Tom Haudricourt, read all his coverage from the winter meetings in Las Vegas at jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We'll chat again real soon.
Okay, thanks, JR.
That will do it for this episode of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Hope you enjoyed our winter meetings edition. We'll catch up with you again as soon as we have some more off-season news. There might be some coming up really in the next week. There might be some coming up. We might have to wait a little bit longer, like last year, January 25th, as everyone now remembers, was the big day in Brewers history, I guess you could say. So as soon as there's something meaty worth discussing, I'll touch base again with Tom Haudricourt or Todd Rosiak and bring you more information via the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Make sure to follow us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating, review, let us know what you think. We love those ratings, those reviews. You can find me on Twitter. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. That's at JRRADCLIFFE. Of course, you can find Tom Haudricourt online on Twitter at Haudricourt, HAUDRICOURT. Enjoy the rest of the Brewers offseason here. Until we meet again, talk to you soon.